Subcommittee on Natural Resources Committee meeting for Thursday, January 25th, 2007. We have three items on the agenda. An overview of the Water Resources Department, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. We will start off. Paul, I believe you have something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at your place, you'll also see next week's copy of next week's schedule. We'll have on Monday there'll be a grant request from the Department of State Lands, Department of State Lands, and then we'll start in with the Dogami budget. Tuesday will be Dogami, also public testimony for the Dogami budget. Wednesday, Department of Energy, and also Thursday, Department of Energy public testimony. I'd also note that you'll see by the door there's a cart that has a number of notebooks with your names on them. We'd ask that you take the first of the GRB notebooks with you when you leave today, or have your staff come down and grab them. They're a little bit of a handful, but I will try to remind you as well before we end the meeting.
Yeah. And we should remind everyone that when you take them, bring them back when they're before the committee in the following week.
Don't ask me to remember anything.
Janelle will take care.
Sorry.
Okay, with that, we will start off with the Water Resources Department. Mr. Ward. And I am starting to think, Mr. Ward, that this BAM analyst is terribly overwhelmed. Well, she seems to be here for about two-thirds of these agencies.
She is a hard worker, Mr. Chair, and we appreciate that. For the record, my name is Phil Ward, the Director of the Water Resources Department, and with me today is Lisa Pearson from the BAM. And so we are pleased to have her with us today. We've provided you, I think Paul has distributed two documents. One is a larger document here that this is actually what I'm going to work from this morning as we talk together, and then there's a summary piece here as well that really summarizes the key information relative to our agency that may be of use to you in terms of a quick look back at the things we talked about today. So with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll start to work through this document, if that's all right.
That would be fine.
So the first actual page there relates to our mission and what we do at the Department of Water Resources. And you can see our mission there at the top of the slide, serving the public by practicing and promoting responsible water management. But that really encompasses two things relative to this agency, which was created many years ago in state government here in Oregon. Two co-equal goals. One, we're the water supply people, the water quantity people. So if you need to use water in this state, and particularly if you use it in a commercial sense, then you most likely have a permit from us. All the municipalities in the state of Oregon have permits from us to use water. All the farmers in the state of Oregon have permits from us to use water. The exception would be domestic well owners who are not required to get a permit from us before they drill a well, but they do have what we call a water right once that well is drilled for domestic use. So we're the water supply people here in the state of Oregon. The other key piece of that is the stewardship piece, which you can see iterated at the bottom of the slide. And that simply relates to the fact that we also, while we have a statutory charge to provide water for out-of-stream uses, we also have a statutory charge to ensure that in-stream values are met in the state of Oregon, that we are finding ways to address the fish and other environmental needs that relate directly to the water resource. So again, those are two, they may appear to be competing, but we believe very compatible charges that the legislature in years past has given this agency. On the next slide, it's a description of the Water Resources Commission. And like most natural resource agencies, our activities are governed by a group of volunteers from around the state of Oregon. Senator Avakian met with the commission at their last commission meeting in Hillsboro not too long ago. But this group is appointed by the governor, or confirmed by the state senate, and they serve for 4-year terms, and they're appointed geographically. So you can see the names and the areas of the different water resources commissioners there. This is not an advisory group. This is the rulemaking body for the Water Resources Department. So with just a couple exceptions, the rulemaking authority relative to what we do rests with the commission and not with the director. We do have one vacancy, and Senator Nelson, that's in your district right now. Gary Reed has retired from the commission and will be seeking to fill that in the months ahead. The next slide relates to our core strategies for how we do our job. And one of the things that became very clear to me when I joined the Water Resources Department now 4 years ago was that there's a tremendous commitment to that number one activity there, protecting existing water rights. Oregon water law is based on something that the lawyers call the prior appropriation doctrine. It's the same law that governs the 18 western states in terms of how we distribute water. And what that means simply is first in time, first in right. So if I have the oldest priority date on a stream, then it's the Water Resources Department's job to ensure that I get my water before anybody else does. And so if there are folks that are junior to me in priority, they have younger priority dates, and water is short in that system, then the state is responsible to deliver to me as the senior user that water. As you can imagine, that occasionally sets up some conflicts. One of my predecessors has named the first two water masters in Oregon Smith and Wesson, because that is the way a lot of disputes were settled early relative to water. Now we no longer use handguns, but there are lawyers in abundance in the water business in the state of Oregon. So protect existing water rights, that's a key commitment by our staff, and I think we do that fairly well. Another key piece of what we do is facilitating water supply solutions. You know, you wouldn't think in a state like this, with as much precipitation as we receive, some neighborhoods accepted, certainly on the west side with as much precipitation as we receive, that we would have water supply problems in this state, but we do. And those problems relate not only to out-of-stream use, but making sure we have enough water in-stream for the environmental needs. But it's interesting to me that just north of here up at Mount Angel, we have some significant water resource problems there. There's a real strong agricultural community there, and a lot of those folks are experiencing drawdown in their wells to the point where they're close to reaching the triggers in their well permits from us to say if you draw down 25 feet, then we're going to have to shut you off. And so we have water supply needs, even right here in western Oregon, that are fairly significant. And believe me, those folks up there in Mount Angel understand that issue. The third bullet there relates to our understanding of the state's water resource and the demands on them. And I would like to spend just a minute on that issue, because we're a science-based agency, and we strive to make our decisions based on the science. Water science is extremely complex. I've heard Roy Elliker say that fish science is not rocket science, it's worse. I would contend that water science is similar. It's not rocket science, it's worse. And a lot of the things that we're trying to determine don't take place on the surface, but hundreds of feet below ground. We're required to know what that resource is doing for us to give out water rights so we can protect the condition of the resource. And again, we have a strong science staff, I believe, and we spend a lot of time working with our federal partners, particularly the USGS, to increase our understanding of the state of the resource. The fourth bullet there is facilitating voluntary stream flow restoration. And frankly, this is a program that I'm pretty proud of here in terms of what we've been able to do in recent years in Oregon. Obviously, in water-short parts of the state, there are lots of competing uses for water, but there are legitimate in-stream needs that we need to do what we can to make sure are met. And we've had tremendous success in recent years leasing water back in-stream. And farmers today, many farmers around the state, are actually using this as a management tool in their operations, where if they don't have the need, if they're in a crop rotation situation, they don't have the need for water 1 year, they can lease it back in stream. We can protect that water in stream depending on its priority date, and it gives the farmers a little revenue and allows us to meet those environmental needs. Most of this revenue is coming from private sources, so organizations like the Oregon Water Trust are very active in this area. The last bullet there, provide timely and readily accessible water resource data. I had no idea, frankly, how many people were interested in water resource data until I came to the department. And one of the things that I think we've done a real credible job is putting data about the condition of the water resource, about where wells are located, where there's water available for out-of-stream use, where there's not, up on the web. We literally have thousands and thousands of hits a year. One of our major customers of our website is the real estate community. And as you can imagine, wanting to know where, if they're developing here or wanting to site homes there, wanting to know if there's water available in those areas. Okay, if we can move to the next chart. How we're organized, that kind of lays out for you where the employees of the agency are and what they do. I talked a little bit about our science staff. That's in our technical services division there on the far left, 40 staff people. That's where our groundwater scientists reside. That's where our computer folks reside, in the technical services division. This agency chose some time ago to place its IS staff not in the administrative wing of the agency, but in the program part of the agency. And I think the thinking was, this predated me, but I think the thinking was we need to have a computer staff that's driven by the program activities that need to be conducted. It's been really successful, and we have, we think, a really strong and progressive IS staff that resides there. Our public safety responsibilities are in our technical services division. This relates largely to dam safety. We're the dam safety people in the state. We don't bump into the federal agencies on the large federal dams, so where there's a federal responsibility, they take care of that. But there are many, many smaller non-federal dams in the state of Oregon, and we actually have folks that inspect those dams, and when new dams are constructed, that review that construction very carefully to ensure they meet the state's safety requirements. The next division of the agency is the Water Rights and Adjudications Division. If you want a water right permit, this is where you go. So if you apply for a water right, these are the folks that do it. Many of you will remember that years ago we had a really significant backlog in this area. I'm pleased to report that we no longer have a significant backlog in water right permitting. We do have a couple other backlogs in other parts of the agency, but water right permitting is pretty much on target. Even with that, it still takes a fair amount of time to get a water right because there is a statutorily prescribed process with opportunities for public input before we give those out. Our adjudication program rests here. You'll see a budget pop related to the Klamath adjudication, which, Representative, we began in 1975. And we're nearing completion, I'm proud to report, after two U.S. Supreme Court cases and a whole lot of other work. But we are getting close to having the Klamath adjudication done. I think that'll be a
celebration day for the agency. And the hydroelectric program rests with this group. We permit hydroelectric facilities in the state of Oregon through our hydro group there. That's a completely fee-supported program. The next division of the agency is the Field Services Division, and you can see this is where the lion's share of our resources rest. These are the water masters, the front line for our agency out in the community. They distribute water. They are the folks that talk to you if you're using more than you should use, or they're the folks that shut you off if you get to the point on a stream where water's no longer available. And I know I've talked with a gentleman in your area recently, Senator Nelson, about that very fact, that we did indeed regulate back to 1895 on his stream this summer. So that means we shut off water rights that were dated as early as 1895. And he obviously was not too pleased about that. The other piece there, our well constructor inspectors are a part of that division. So we look at wells to ensure they're constructed according to standard. Our hydrographic data collection, these are the folks that actually wade out in streams and measure water. Again, part of our science program is that we need to have good data on what the condition of the water resource is, and so we spend a fair amount of time on those issues. The administrative services division, you can see, is a small shop. But we believe a very efficient group in our agency. And then the final piece of the agency is the director's office. This is where we staff the commission. This is where all the legal work that we do happens in terms of our interface with the Attorney General's office. Again, in the water business, is a mature system in the West and is a relatively litigious system. And so we do have a fairly large budget every biennium for legal interface with the Attorney General's office. We coordinate that out of the director's office. And, of course, our tribal responsibilities rest here. There's significant interface on water issues with the Oregon tribes. And I spend a fair amount of my time personally interfacing with different tribes around the state as we work to resolve their water right claims. The next slide is just a quick look at how we're funded. And my guess is that this is kind of a flip from what you will see with most natural resource agencies. We're primarily a general fund group. About 75% of our revenues are from general fund. We do have about 20% of our revenues from fee support and then a small federal fund portfolio as we do a little bit of cooperative work with different federal agencies. We wanted to include a slide, and we've talked about these issues, so I won't belabor them long, but why what we do is important to Oregonians. Under the certainty bullet, really, the West was settled through this water rights system that we have in place today. The Water Code in Oregon was passed in 1909, and it's really how our state was developed, and we are able to provide certainty to folks who hold water rights, senior water rights, that if the water's available, they're going to get it. And that's important from a business standpoint in the state. Certainly, the next bullet, environmental and economic activities. Again, we feel like it's important that we work to facilitate water availability for both economic and environmental activities. We talked a little bit about our stream flow restoration activities. We think those are important and a key piece of what we do. Water management, manage state's water resources to ensure a sustainable long-term supply. In some parts of the state, that's an extremely challenging issue. And again, I'm sorry, Senator Nelson, to keep referring to your home neighborhood.
I'm the water guy.
but we have seen groundwater declines in Senator Nelson's area of up to 400 feet in some wells. So we have established in that area what we call critical groundwater areas, and there are many
water users there that are receiving, that we only allow to take a fraction of what their water right would allow, because we're charged with trying to maintain the resource in a sustainable fashion. And so very, very difficult situations. We've worked with the landowner there recently that it's put him in a very tough economic position because he's only gotten 10% of what his water right says he could take, and it's tough to grow a crop on that. But that's our job, and something that we are very committed to doing in a responsible manner. Talked about the public safety issue. Obviously, we don't want a well drilled or a dam built in this state that's built in an unsafe manner. And occasionally we will find some of those. I've had good luck working with people to get them corrected. And then the water resource data issue we've talked about already. Wanted to mention just quickly three things relative to the budget and environmental factors that we function under. The first, and there'll be a slide that'll iterate that here just quickly, we've had an increasing workload and in recent years significantly decreasing resources. And we've dealt with that, frankly, through the use of information technology, but we are really close to the tipping point in some of our program areas in terms of being able to credibly fulfill our responsibilities. The second bullet, satisfying additional demands in a system where, frankly, nearly all the water is allocated. So how do we make sure people get water who need it? And then lastly, the Klamath Basin adjudication. And as I mentioned earlier, a representative, 86% of the claims down there for water in the Klamath have been resolved. But we have some big ones left to resolve. The federal agencies and the tribal claims are kind of the last piece of what we're working on in the Klamath Basin adjudication. We're scheduled to tidy that all up in December of 2009. The next slide, I think, very graphically indicates where we have been in terms of the resources, staff resources in the agency. Again, we saw this current biennium the lowest level of resources in memory of any of the staff in the agency we've been functioning with. The governor's budget begins to reinvest some staff in the agency, and again, we think that's critically important to our ability to fulfill our statutory responsibilities. The next slide, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to show you graphically where you could get a new water right if you wanted one. Not very many places. This is surface water, and so this is where stream flow would be available for new appropriation. You can see a couple of spots where it says data is not available. That's because those are closed lake basins down there, and we have to do it doesn't fit our regular model for how we evaluate whether water is available, and we have to do a site-by-site analysis, but there's not a heck of a lot of water down there just generally. So again, one of the challenges we face, there isn't a large water resource available. The last thing I'd mention then today, Mr. Chair and members, is just to identify for you where the governor has chosen to invest in our budget. With the budget that you all are considering at this time for us. Three things. One is something we're calling the Oregon Water Supply and Conservation Initiative, which if I can just briefly give you a bit of explanation there. We did a survey. It was interesting to me when I joined the agency to learn that we did not, as the water supply people, have a long-term strategy for how we were going to meet Oregon's water supply needs in the years ahead. We surveyed the 18 western states that function under the same laws as we do, and there were two states that didn't have such a strategy. We were one. Alaska was the other. We believe it's incumbent upon this agency to have a plan for how we supply Oregon's future water supply needs. And what the Water Supply and Conservation Initiative will do is give us the foundation, the data, for building that plan. And it essentially does five things. One, it will assess our future demand for water. It will assess where we have the opportunity to store water, where we can take it in the winter when it's abundant, store it for use in the summer, both above and below ground, because we've had some really good success recently with aquifer storage, putting it back down in the ground. The third thing it will do is assess where we can gain new supply through conservation. And we believe this is a critical piece. Oregon, on a per capita basis, does a better job in terms of water conservation than our neighboring states. But we believe there are significant gains that can still be made in terms of conserving water and developing new supply that way. So that's the third piece. The fourth piece, I just lost the fourth piece. The fifth piece.
Watershed storage.
Yes. The storage piece there, and then the fifth piece of that proposal would be to provide some matching grants for local communities who are attempting to do some water supply planning, so we can partner up with the locals to get some of these ideas in place. The other key budget investment, the field piece, years ago we had assistant water masters funded by counties in every county of our state. At one time, that assistant water master corps was over 40 assistant water masters statewide. Today, it's 15 in terms of county-funded water masters. What this does is begin to restore some field capability, because we've lost in our own field program positions as well in the last decade. So this begins to restore some of that field capability, would put one new assistant water master in our five different regions. The last piece is the governor's budget fully funds the Klamath adjudication. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we actually hope to finish that in my working career. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'll conclude my presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. We're going to have about 5 minutes for questions. Senator Nelson.
Yeah, just your comment on Smith and Wesson, I just want you to know it's still alive and well. And tragically, in my county, we had two people that are dead in the last 10 days over, I don't know if it was water, but some sort of landowner dispute where two neighbors got together and ended up, one shot the other one and killed him, and the son of the fellow that was killed shot the fellow that shot his father. So, I mean, Smith and Wesson, at least in my part of the country, is still alive. And very, very tragic.
I'm not happy to hear that.
It's a very tragic situation. And, yeah. But it's, I mean, Smith and Wesson is still alive in some of these. And at some point, I'd like to have a chart on this August available stream flow, so like in January. I mean, there is water available in the winter months. And and then also on your water study, I have introduced a Senate Bill 600 that I think is going to Senator Alvakian's committee for water study, just for the, you know, so that we have a policy discussion also for that.
Thank you. Representative Grohn.
I wanted to congratulate you, Phil. You made it 12 minutes into your presentation before you mentioned Klamath. I don't want to monopolize, because I could sit here for another hour, but I do hope that we will make touch with each other personally to discuss the Klamath Basin. For the committee's benefit, water adjudication in the Klamath Basin is, we're at 86%. It only took us 15 years to get to 86%, which is in an area that's been so water conscious, this has been one of the biggest hindrances to developing some answers in the Klamath Basin has been this water. So I know it's a priority item with you, and it's being taken care of. In regards to inspecting dams, obviously you're aware we had a dam break in the Klamath Basin that flooded out a major arterial way between Klamath Falls and Medford. So that will be another topic I will be interested in seeing who didn't inspect what. And finally, your opinion when we talk about water rights, there has been and probably will in this session again be considerable discussion on water rights through irrigation districts. And I'm just wondering if you could give us any kind of overview as to what the department's opinion is on irrigation districts and water rights.
Chair. Representative, a couple good questions you posed there. And before I get to that last one, I just would note that the issue you raised about the Klamath adjudication, the reason it is so important is that the state cannot regulate for senior users, be those environmental needs, tribal needs, farmer needs. We can't regulate in a basin until we have an adjudication complete. And so in all this water tough time that we've been through down there, the state's really been a non-player because we haven't had the tools in place to do it. That's why it's so important that we complete that adjudication. Relative to the to kind of the water right ownership issue, irrigation districts, Mr. Chair and Representative, we certainly believe irrigation districts are an extremely important piece of the water landscape in Oregon. They were formed by farmers generally to meet farmer needs. And so we think they're a very useful tool, and we do what we can to support them in their efforts to deliver water to the agricultural community. That said, we believe that a water right is appurtenant to the land, so it's attached to the land. And so that irrigation district gets to water or manage that water within those district boundaries, but the ultimate right is attached to the land to which it's delivered. And I think that's the department's long-held view. I think we continue to sit right there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ward, a couple of items. One, in terms of the long-term planning work that you said hasn't been done, and we had that discussion. And I would hope that you would be thinking of a time frame that was really long-term, like somewhere between 30 and 50 years, particularly given the expectation that so many people have that we are going to be facing wetter falls and winters and drier springs and summers, which really brings to head the question of water storage and what our expectations might be. I'd just like to say I know that Representative Garrard and Senator Nelson and actually probably to some extent Representative Burley live with this on a daily basis. And sometimes I think why we are kind of last in that group of states is I can remember times when I was in various regional meetings in the West years ago when they would see some of the things that we would do with water in the Willamette Valley. I mean, and they would say, what are you doing? You know, it's like, why are you wasting all of that water? And I think it's just simply a matter of perception. I think our average citizen thinks we have, on some days here in the Willamette Valley and probably on the coast, they probably think we got far more water than we need. So,
very true, Senator.
Yeah. Any additional questions or comments? Thank you very much, Mr. Ward. I look forward to having you back. Next, we will go on to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Moore. We'll have about 20 minutes for a presentation, maybe about 5-6 minutes for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Burke Moore. I'm Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's nice to be here today. And I'm looking forward to our presentation and some questions and discussions. I have with me Lori Byerly, Deputy Director over the Administrative Programs this morning, and in the back of the room is Roy Elliker, known to most of you, Deputy Director for the Fish and Wildlife Field Operations Program. So hopefully we can handle your questions today as we move forward. You have a handout. We're going to work from that to work us through. We'll try to go over some of the agency. The agency's mission is set by code, by and large. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is a over 100-year-old agency in one form or another and has been around since before the turn of the previous century, the late 1890s, and has gone through different forms. In 1975, the agency of the Sport Fish and Wildlife Agency combined with the commercial fisheries entity to form the current Department of Fish and Wildlife as we know it today. The mission from that combination is best stated in the line, and this is what we have, is that is to protect and enhance Oregon's fish and wildlife and their habitats for use and enjoyment of present and future generations. And really what it gets to is the fact that we manage for sustainability, and any use of fish and wildlife populations has to be sustainable over time. And that premise is in Oregon Code. The statutory authority is fairly well stated in Chapters 496 and to some degree through 513. And as a new Oregonian here, as I've been reading through the code, I find it very interesting that many of the goals and priorities of the agency are listed in code. And I find that our planning and organization is addressing most of those goals. And we'll talk a little bit more about those. On an annual basis, the leadership of the agency, working with the staff in the agency, try to develop our principles and priorities. And that's what you see on the bottom part of this second page. And the principles are fairly high-level types of things, but get at some of the issues that are important to our agency. Things like fiscal integrity. Since we're predominantly funded by license fees from our users as well as some general funds, it's important for us to demonstrate that fiscal integrity because we routinely come back to this body to ask for fee increases. Now, I will preempt that with we're not asking for any revenue increases in our license fees this session. That fee was last increased, I believe, in 2004. And we are maintaining the use of that fee over time to deal with inflationary and other issues. We will be likely working with our public in the next year, starting this next year. We have a budget advisory committee to go back to them and ask them, what do you want us to do and how do we best provide those resources? And we'll be developing that over the next 2 years. But for this biennium, we're not doing that. We need to promote workplace enhancement. What's that mean? Workforce enhancement. We need to make sure that our staff, because of all state agencies, the baby boomers are moving through, particularly in the fish and wildlife profession. And we have an obligation to make sure that we have the ability to move folks into that profession. And so we're moving aggressively into a workplace enhancement, basically career planning and placement. This is nationwide. We're going to see the baby boomers move out in the next 4 to 10 years, and it's a tremendous gap in knowledge and training. And we're going to be aggressively pursuing that in this next year and biennium to get that in place. The other one I'll talk about here is trust and confidence relative to our relationships with the public. And we'll Oregon has a long history in all of its agencies and the fish and wildlife of working with the user public. We'll continue to do that. We use advisory boards. We're constantly involved in public input processes relative to both the rules and the plans and programs we've got. And we'll continue to do that and maintain that communication and relationship building among our constituents. So what are our priorities for the next year that we have listed internally? We have a new point-of-sale system. We're going to bring that up online. It was contracted, and it's being worked on right now, and we'll come online the start of the next biennium, probably in early July, and we'll be ready to go with that. In the meantime, we have the old system functioning just fine, but the new system will operate much better when we get it functioning and going with our new contractor. We're going to continue with trying to maintain our state sovereignty over fish and wildlife populations by developing our recovery plans. What those mean is the most recent one we're working with is the Coastal Cohort Plan. The implementation of that plan demonstrates clearly that the state of Oregon can and will manage its fish and wildlife populations to maintain that sustainability, and that we don't need, in many cases, federal oversight on those, and we're going to manage those under our own state sovereignty. That's best demonstrated by putting these conservation strategies in writing demonstrating what we've done, what we're doing, and what we're going to do. And you'll find that many of our plans, whether it is the Wolf Plan, which is somewhat controversial, but it demonstrates what our plans are as wolves recover in this state, what we want to do once they're delisted and how we manage them, just like we're going to do with our fish and other sensitive wildlife, whether listed or not. We need to have that to maintain our authority over them as best we can. We're going to promote fishing and hunting opportunities. We need to be proactive, work with the travel industry, with others in the state, to be sure that the great opportunities we have in Oregon are available to and known by both our resident populations as well as our non-residents. It's a big industry. And while we have somewhat static or slightly declining user base, we know that we can market and promote that industry such that users will participate in it, and that it, with the resulting economic benefits to local communities. We're going to implement the Oregon Conservation Strategy and the Near Shore Strategies. These are two new plans. The Oregon Conservation Strategy is primarily focused on non-game species. It's required by the feds for us to get at some federal money called state wildlife grants. We've got that in place. Oregon won an award from the Nature Conservancy for one of the best plans in the nation, and that Oregon Conservation Strategy gets at what we need to do for fish and wildlife and habitats for those other species out there that we really haven't had the resources or the plans in place to get at. This allows us to access more federal funds, and you'll hear more discussions on this later as we go on. We're also going to look at our statewide trout production in the next year, and we're going to focus in on making sure that our hatchery programs meet both the conservation needs of our native fish populations as well as the needs of the populations to go fishing. And we can do that, and we're going to focus on that. There are some infrastructure needs and some real challenges there. We'll talk about those. Let's flip over to the third page here. The agency organization, we're organized very similar to Water Resources. We have a commission of seven individuals. They represent five congressional districts. They're organized geographically, one from each of the five congressional districts, one from the east side, one from the west side. Those commissioners are appointed by the governor for four-year staggered terms, and they're confirmed by the Senate. We just recently had a new commissioner from over in the east part of the state near Pendleton, and come online. We have those rotate routinely through the seven commissioners. The director, myself, I work at the pleasure of the commission. So the appointment there is through the commission for that staff. And you can see how the rest of the staff organization is laid out in this particular case, with most of our staff, the bulk of our staff being directed at the fish and wildlife programs that are out there both on the ground and in the field, as well as managing these statewide programs from the headquarters office. Our administrative programs there are a smaller portion of that. If you look at the 112 FTEs for the internal operations of the agency relative to the 1,050 that we currently have elsewhere. The commission does the rule making, so all those fishing rules and regulations that you see and try to figure out as you're deciding where to go for fishing and hunting, we present those to the commission for their approval based on public input and review. And much like Water Resources, as you heard them mention, we're a science-based organization. At the same time, there are a number of issues that have nothing to do with science that the commission has to deal with relative to fair chase and social management of the public that are out there. Those are some of the most contentious issues that the commission has to deal with, because there really isn't any necessarily right or wrong in terms of the science. It has to do with the judgment and what the desires of the public are. What are our program services and functions? We're divided into three primary areas, and that's the fisheries program, the wildlife program, and basically the administrative support functions for those. The fish program itself has four primary areas: natural production, propagation, the Marine Resource Program, and the Interjurisdictional Fisheries. And each of those programs is distinct and managed by a separate program manager, the fisheries program, and gets at all of the fishing activities there. I won't take the time necessarily to go over all those, but things like the STEP program fit under natural production. Propagation, obviously, is the hatchery program. Marine resources are both sport and commercial aspects of managing our marine resources. And our office is in Newport for that, with a full staff there that monitors and manages and recommends the marine management program there. And the interjurisdictional fisheries, as you're aware of, the complexities of both the marine environment as well as the anadromous fish that come up and down the Columbia and other streams require an awful lot of interaction with our partners out there, both from a federal and tribal standpoint, to be sure that we're meeting the legal mandates and representing the state of Oregon properly. And that arena is getting more complex all the time as the demands on those resources increase. Wildlife programs are divided into three major groups, and that is the game, the habitat, and the wildlife diversity program. Game and habitat is pretty much pretty straightforward. Those are the primary species we hunt for. And the habitat program deals with the access and habitat program, which is part of the set-aside money from license fees that is used to do specific access and habitat work, manages our land management areas, places as diverse as Saudi Island, where a lot of the folks in the urban area use, but is also a primary hunting area for many of our folks. The wildlife diversity, really the simple aspect of that is it's the non-game program. Those other species out there, and that is where the Oregon Conservation Strategy is managed out of, is this wildlife diversity program. We also have an enforcement program that is very important to the agency. We know that Fish and Wildlife Management relies on having some of that enforcement out there, and that program is done by the Fish and Wildlife Division of the Oregon State Police. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife funds a significant part of that program, and we coordinate very closely with that program, to the point that the captain and his primary staff often, in fact, almost always are involved in our staff leadership retreats. Annual planning for what is important for Fish and Wildlife Management goes on hand in hand with the Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Division of OSP. One of the areas that is going to be very important to us is our capital improvement program. Well, the administration capital improvement program is divided into the human resources, our information services, our administrative services aspects, and finally the information and education program. We have a capital improvement program that is also managed out of this group. We have about $58 million in replacement value in all of the hatcheries, wildlife management areas, and other buildings we've got out there. We just completed a capital improvement document that says we need to invest about $5 million over the next few years to get the backlog taken care of. The other program I want to spend just a second on is the information education program. We're putting a lot of emphasis in that program. It's key to state statutes that require hunter education. The hunter education program is managed out of this group, but is operated under a volunteer. The volunteers do the work. And it's important for us to have this program functioning well to meet the needs of both those volunteers and the hunting public that's out there. We're also going to enhance our recruitment retention program out of the INE program. Lastly, next to the last, is the pie charts for the budget. The governor's recommended budgets for this biennium is $261 million. This is the high-level overview. I'm sure we'll get down to the details later. And just so you know, it's about 11% increase over this biennium. And there is, again, no increase in our request for general license revenue in here. This is coming from other sources, and we'll get down to those details. You can see how the funds are both allocated in terms of revenue source in the pie chart there, but the bulk of that is other funds, which is predominantly fishing and hunting licenses and our fees for commercial permits. and that's the bulk of that amount. We get a small amount of lottery funds. 7% of our budget comes from general funds in this particular case. You can also see how the money is spent. The fish program is the lion's share of the budget. The biggest chunk of that is our mitigation programs. It operates our hatcheries and mitigation activities that are out there on the ground, and is funded via the federal government through a number of programs, but a big chunk of it from BPA and some other federal sources of money that come into the department for our activities. You see the capital improvement program down there at 2% at 5.5. That's going to be very important to maintaining the infrastructure so we can deliver the services the public expects. What are our successes and challenges? Well, some of the successes we've had have been in the planning arena. The Coastal Coho Plan, the Oregon Conservation Strategy, the Nearshore Strategy, the Cougar Management Plan. Those activities are extremely important to us in terms of demonstrating what we're doing now and what we're going to do in the future so we can maintain that state sovereignty I discussed earlier. We've also had some really great successes with the Oregon Hatchery Research Center getting completed and being brought online, and research is beginning in earnest. Dr. Noakes is in place. We're excited about that facility assisting us. We also had a major project this last year on Diamond Lake where we renovated that lake and removed the Tui Chubs, and we're getting ready to put that one back into production, and hopefully that'll enhance the economic and recreational value of that area. What are our challenges? The backlog, again, of facilities is larger than what we're asking for in this budget. We need to spend about $9 million over the next biennium. We're going to try to use that 5.5 and other monies to get at that. We need to maintain our purchasing power of license and tag revenues. Whenever we get a fee increase, we get this big jump of money, we put some of it in the bank, and then we use it over time to take care of inflation. At some point, inflation erodes the purchase power of that, and our ability to deliver services goes down. At the end of this biennium, our purchasing power for our license revenues at the current sales rate of fishing and hunting licenses will be gone. We will be basically either having to reduce programs or ask our using public for additional revenues to keep those programs functioning at the level they're at. This is not new. It happens routinely every 4 to 6 years that we bring that forward. We will need to discuss with the public bringing forward a fee increase in 2 more years. So that's a challenge that we have. One of the aspects that we're going to implement is, can we sell more licenses? Can we get more users out there so that we have some growth in that? Right now, fishing licenses are totally static. They're just practically flat for the last 20 years, some blips in there. Hunting licenses are very slowly declining as the baby boom generation moves through and is less physically active and isn't out chasing things as much. We're not recruiting new users relative to that. Our share of the population that hunts and fish has fallen almost in half of what it was 20 years ago. Our population is going up. Our license sales are static, so our proportion of the population that is paying for fish and wildlife management in this state has fallen from just over almost 40% for fishing down to 20. Just over 20%, about 21%, down to 9% for hunting are the people that are paying the way in terms of the total population. It's a challenge that we need to have a discussion about. How do we get the resources to maintain that? The growing part of our population base, wildlife viewing. All you have to do is look at the use of our wildlife management areas by non-hunters and fishermen. Savi Island use has just gone through the ceiling, close to an urban area. And it's not the hunters and fishermen that are using it. It's the recreation folks that are out there to have a wildlife-based recreation activity in addition to the hunters and fishermen. How do we get some resources from them to manage the infrastructure of the organization to deliver those services to them? Economically, though, one of the things we know, even though the users are flat, they're participating more. The number of days hunted has gone up. The number of days fished has doubled in the last 20 years on a per-person basis. As baby boomers age, they have more money, and they're using their discretionary time to go fishing and hunting more. They're spending more money. This is a $2.1 billion business in this state just for first-time spending. $1.4 billion of that is for hunting and fishing. The other $700 million of it is fish and wildlife-based recreation other than hunting and fishing. It's big business. It's a big activity. We're operating under our biennium budget of $260 million to manage all of that resource that's producing annually that $2.1 billion of spending. And that doesn't include the commercial fishing and aspect. I don't have those numbers aren't part of that. So that's our high-level overview. I'm getting close on time, so I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Just for the record, note that Representative Clem has joined us. He actually called this morning, so he was excused before this time. And we're in the middle of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I have the feeling when I open for questions, I'm going to have a lot of questions, but we have about 6 or 7 minutes. Representative Dingfeld, then Representative Garrard, then Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, these are more some rhetorical questions that certainly I hope you can come back and talk to the committee about. First one is in regards to the point you had just been discussing, and I also want to say that, by the way, since Mr. Moore has been with the agency, since I work a lot with the fishing community and the conservation community, I've heard very good feedback and just want to commend you on the job you've been doing, and especially you've had some challenging times with the financial situation. We've talked about this in the past. I'm starting to sound like a broken record, but given that your last statement about the shift in revenues and the fact that we have declining hunting and fishing licenses, a big chunk of your budget, other funds is coming from those fees, and that I want to continue to engage in discussions with your commission about how we can look at a new vision for the agency that is has an ability to take advantage of the increasing passive recreation in wildlife viewing and other opportunities, because there is going to have to be a paradigm shift here. I mean, the old way obviously is not working anymore for your agency, and so I'm having a large urban population that is very close to Savvy's Island and have used the facility myself many times, I want to work with your commission and your agency to help in that transition, because we can't continue to operate the way we have unless we're either going to increase fees greatly on the folks who are using just still hunting and fishing, or we've got to shift the way we're funding these resources. So I'm very happy and willing to work with you, and I know that I've spoken with many of your commissioners on that. I do have a question, if I may follow up quickly. I would like you to come back to this committee and talk about how the agency has dealt with the sale of your Portland building, where that money has gone, if it's gone into your general fund. I know that you are now leasing your building, so obviously that was a sale, and where that money went, if it was invested in other capital projects, or if that went into the general fund, or how that money has been allocated.
And that information we'll bring that back to you.
Thank you.
In regard to that, you might also respond to how it was paid for. Because if it was paid for with user fees.
I don't think it was, but especially for those who weren't here, and I think this side, we were here through all the sale of that building.
Yeah. So take care of that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Garrard, and then Representative
Thank you, Burley. Mr. Chair. I'm Virgil, welcome to Oregon. And I'm not going to get into the Cougar Management Plan.
The wolves with them, by the way, behind her.
Right, I was checked at the border when I came across. So.
But a couple sessions ago, we had a very good discussion with Roy and some real movement in the fact this is in regard to the duplication of expenditures and enforcement of the Endangered Species Act. We have both the state and the federal, and the difficulty in getting something delisted from the Endangered Species Act. I'd like to just get a very quick overview on your opinion in that area.
We need to work with the federal agencies to gain as much authority to take care of that ourselves. We need to get the agreements with them that allows us to manage and undertake the necessary enforcement oversight under our authority. And we know how to do that. There's a mechanism in the Endangered Species Act to do that.
We need to pursue that and get those in place. The Fish and Wildlife Service is much easier to work with in getting that authority back than NOAA Fisheries has been. And we need to step up our efforts with NOAA Fisheries to see if we can achieve that. And so I'm aware of the issue. You'll find that I'm a very strong state sovereign and state rights person relative to the management of fish and wildlife. And while we have to be responsive to those federal mandates, we can show that we are, and we can probably do it better and cheaper than the feds can.
You can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Burgel. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Burgel, it's good to see you again. Let me just start by saying first, I don't think I would put Cougar Management Plan down as a success because, as you know, I'm not in agreement with that plan, but, you know, that battle's over. Also, I want to say that I'm obviously a big supporter of the agency because I spent a lot of money on your tags, which I don't think are too highly priced, and which is probably contrary to what other people tell you. And furthermore, I think that the more time we spend in this building, the less time I'm out fishing. So I'm going to
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I'm with you.
But as I said during the interim when you were visiting with us in the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, I'm very, very concerned about the decline in license sales, tag sales. And I would like very much to see some kind of a game plan by the department on how to address that issue. I think, you know, some of the things you've done, like the kids' day hunting opportunities, very, very good programs. I'd really like to work with you on that because I think that's a very, very important matter that we need to address. The other thing that causes me a little bit of frustration from time to time is how your department interacts with the federal land management agencies. Obviously I'm very frustrated when we're burning up hundreds of thousands, if not millions of acres of federal land each year. And I see from time to time your department's folks sending letters to the federal land management agencies that for all intents and purposes are opposing management activities when in fact I feel should be supporting them so that we're not having these catastrophic and uncharacteristic wildfires. And I think it all ties right in with the habitat. It ties back into the hunting opportunities because, as your budget analyst says, a lot of this is perceived. I mean, people are not buying hunting tags anymore because they don't think there's any animals out there. And I think that's not an unreasonable conclusion. So I just want to register that. And perhaps sometime we can have further discussion about it, but I think it's a very, very important issue and one that I'm starting to see more and more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to echo some of those comments and my desire to be included and an active participant. I have an extremely strong bias, which is I hunt elk, deer, I fish, you know, most stock all every year. I always have. And on the decline in tags, you know, I think I can be helpful and sort of, you know, over time, and not right now because I know we don't have time, but in the sense of what's going on with at least the hunting community I know. You know, when you show up and there's 50 Californians all over the place making your life miserable, you don't feel like going hunting next year. So not to expose any other biases, Mr. Chair, but I would be more than happy and will want to participate in these kind of conversations about how to make it the thing it should be, which is hunters voluntarily paying money to manage game on behalf of the taxpayers of this state and enjoying themselves while doing it.
And Representative Clinton, you did say you were licensed when you were hunting all of
them. Always. Always.
Just covering it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Ms. Moore, it wasn't necessarily my desire, but unless my schedule changes, you're about the last agency that we do in this committee.
Yes.
That wasn't intentional. It was just simply where you ended up. So there will be a lot of time for people to work on this, around these issues before we actually get to the budget for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I would encourage any of you, if you have questions, to contact Mr. Moore and his department, and actually, obviously, to contact our analyst, Mr. Siebert, here, because we'll have plenty of time to focus on some of these issues. And I do believe you have some long-term funding issues that probably require more creative solutions than you've had in the past. So with that, I'll thank you. If there are no more questions, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And next we will move on to Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. You have a handout. Ms. McConnell, the director, will be presenting. I should say to the committee, this is going to be the most compact sort of decision-making process that you have on an agency. Ms. McConnell is here today. She will be here on Monday and Tuesday. There is a portion of her budget that will probably be split out and will be considered later, but her primary portion of her budget we will probably be acting on relatively soon after that. So she has probably the most compact process. She's one of the agencies that the co-chairs have selected for an expedited process. So she's probably not terribly disappointed by that.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, Chair. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I'm the director for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And thank you for the opportunity to come in and give you an overview today. This is, I like to think of us, we're a science-based agency, and so we're the beta test on how you're going to be conducting your process this time around. So. I'll let you know if it doesn't work. I did have a couple of remarks. Even though we are a smaller agency, I have my watch here, and I'll try to take up just as much time as everyone else has as well.
Well, let you know that we'll have to go to questions about 7 minutes.
Okay, fine. We'll zip right through this. And I had to remark, I really should just say, take everything that both my predecessors, who did just superb jobs of presenting, and just substitute geology everywhere that they had their type of program, and we can just move from there. And I do apologize. I have Lisa Pearson from the DAS BAM with me as well today. I didn't introduce you, Lisa, since you've just been up here the whole time. She is our great an analyst and a huge help to all of us. I noticed that you asked Water Resources to start thinking far out, 30 to 50 years out, and if you stretch that a little further, you might actually get into geologic time there and very soon. If you turn to your first page, we'll go over quickly what our mission is. The Department of Geology and Mineral Industries mission is to produce and use geologic information to promote the health, safety, and welfare for Oregonians. And we do that by producing science. We both produce scientific information, geological scientific information, compile information that's out there, and help form policy that involves mineral resources, land use decisions, and really all the other natural resources that we have as well. I'll remind you that geology really does form the backbone of many of the natural resource and land use decisions that we make in this state. We also have a regulatory responsibility. We regulate for the operation of surface mining make sure that we have the least amount of off-site impact, and also for secondary beneficial use for reclamation. We also regulate for oil and gas drilling for exploration and production, and for geothermal drilling and exploration and production, of which geothermal has been named in the governor's renewable energy packet as one of the renewable energy resources for the state. We produce a variety of information, geologic information. We try to key our geologic information to the customers or users. We have maps, we have reports, we have GIS, geographic information system based layers. We produce really reviews. We work with the water resource departments on their hydrologic dam applications and permits to offer advice to them. We work with several of the other federal agencies on looking at siting applications for sitings as well. And we are the geologics, we are the source for geology and geologic information for the state. All states have geologic services and geologic surveys. If you turn to the second page, you'll see our organizational chart. We're a relatively small agency. Up in the right-hand corner, you'll see we're 36.7 FTE total. That gives us 40 authorized positions. We presently have three limited, the LD means limited duration positions, and we have three temporary or student interns. Those last two, the limited duration and temporary positions, we use those type of folks as flexibility relative to what programs or projects we have going at the time, and we are very project-oriented. So if we have a need for extra staff, then we usually do that through temporaries and limited duration. Because we have both a science and a regulatory responsibility, we have broken our overall organization of the agency into two primary programs. One, our geologic services and survey, which is the geology part of the agency, and then the second is our mineral lands regulation and reclamation, which is more regulatory. And I'll be going into a little more detail about both these programs in a moment. We, as well with the other natural resource agencies, we have a governing board. We don't have a commission, but it's a governing board. They do have rulemaking authority. They are appointed by the governor, and we have five members on our board. And they are also statutorily required to be geographic spread across the state. So at any one time when we're looking for new members, we're looking to fairly administer or fairly to have the board represent the entire state. Now, in the Geologic Survey and Services Program, we have a whole series of what we are called sections. This works out when we're looking at our budget, but if you turn to the next page, you'll see that's not really how we design our internal structure. At any one time, several of our professionals and our administrative staff in the survey may be working on one or more projects. And I would stress that it's usually the more rather than the one project, because we have a small professional staff and we have a lot of projects we're working on. For example, this digital geologic mapping project, which is a six-year project to compile all the relevant geoscience data for the state into a digital model that will be available as an interactive website format. We have 11 or 12 staff. You'll see them circled along those sections down there. So the sections really don't mean anything to us when we're designing our projects or our internal programs. We're looking at where we need specialists or where we need those type of help with completing the program. The Geologic Survey and Services Program is really the one for creating and compiling the geoscientific data. Our present business plan is a project shop. If you look at the pie chart there, that's actually a snapshot, just a snapshot of our revenue estimates and funding partners for 2005-2007. And as you can see, if you eliminate Senate Bill 2, and I'll talk about that as a separate project in a moment, we're really looking at federal funds and other funds funding about two-thirds of all of the work that we do in our geologic survey. And so our projects are primarily funded by our federal fund partners, of which I've listed most of them there, and other state agencies and local governments who need unbiased geologic information for the work that they're doing with land use or resource assessments, etc. This is a real challenge. This is going to be one of the challenges that I'll talk about on how we can continue our agency. Senate Bill 2 was a two-year mandated project that we are will be completing in this legislative session, and that is to conduct a seismic vulnerability survey of public facilities, all public schools in the state, emergency response facilities, fire stations, and police stations and acute care hospitals, and that report will be coming out before the end of this legislative session. So that money will be phased out. That's $598,000. That was a one biennia project. If you look at this list, we presently have about 30 projects we're working on. The Senate Bill 2 I've mentioned, the digital geologic map. We do a considerable amount of geologic hazard studies. I wanted to point out that we are the ones that form the Klamath Basin geologic map compilation. So when Mr. Ward was talking about this work that they're doing in the Klamath Basin on the water adjudication and on the issues they have there, when they're trying to model the groundwater studies there, they have to have the geologic information for that. You have to know what the bathtub looks like before you can know where what the water is like in that bathtub. And we're the ones that help develop that bathtub. And so you don't see us at the top of the list. We're the ones, again, forming that backbone information. We are involved in coastal studies. If you turn to the next page, it gives you an idea of where some of our present projects are. All those red dots are one of these projects that we were talking about. You'll see there's a lot of projects that we're doing on the coast. We have a coastal field office with specialists in coastal erosion and coastal processes. You can imagine, and I know you've heard about it, you've read about it, as we start seeing sea level rise and we start seeing changes in our sea level on the coast, we're seeing new stresses on coastal erosion and coastal processes. And we work very closely with both our federal and state agencies to provide the scientific information and the monitoring so that we can get out ahead of the issues that are going to occur there. And there's going to be, well, there already are issues, but they're only going to compile. We have had a fundamental shift in our business plan in the geologic survey from resource assessment. Back in the old days at the turn of the century when this agency was first formed, it was really looking at mineral resource assessments and that capability for rural economic development. Where are the minerals that we could extract, and how could we help particularly Northeast Oregon and Southwest Oregon, which is where most of our precious metals and mineral resources are. Through the years, we've had a shift to where we really map where the people are and the issues, and the mineral resource that we really are most involved in now are groundwater studies. And I should mention, if you see on this and you go, oh, they never do anything in eastern Oregon, that's not true. We have recently completed several major groundwater and geologic map compilations, both in the Grand Ronde and the Umatilla basins, and those have been quite helpful for the issues that are out there. And we are now shifting over more. Interestingly enough, there hasn't been a major groundwater study and geologic map compilation for the Willamette Valley, so that's one of the areas we're focusing on right now. For this program, if you turn to the next page, I'll just sum up quickly. Our successes are that we can evolve the program to remain relevant to the information that's needed and necessary for the state. We find and implement efficiencies. As a matter of fact, all the policy option packages that we requested, we're really looking at accelerating some of our geologic hazard programs. And of those, one we will be talking about on Monday and Tuesday, and we managed to maintain an overall customer satisfaction. You'll see a graph down there that shows our customer satisfaction from the performance measures. Our challenges are our funding structure is not optimal. It's not predictable since we're always looking for project money, and we feel we need to invest more money in the availability of information. Now, if you move to the next page, we'll talk about our mineral lands regulation and reclamation program. That is a fee-structured program that, as I said, regulates the surface mining, oil and gas drilling, and for exploration and development and geothermal. It's also staffed with a crack professional staff of reclamationists. Many of them have geologic or geohydrologic backgrounds. We base that program on field, our business plan there are on field-based inspections and being proactive with the folks that we regulate and the community around them to be able to anticipate where the issues are before we end up having to go into litigation all the time. I did want to point out I had one circle on our org chart there, and that's because we had a position that was last time around put into a limit from a permanent to a limited duration position, and we will be coming back and ask that be put back to a permanent position. We had a fee restructure in our aggregate program last time, and we are uh, uh, well on our way now of being able to fund that particular position that the stakeholders have been asking for with someone with a fishery or biological background. So at some point we'll be requesting that technical adjustment. If you turn to the page with the pie chart, I said we're fee-based in this. Our business plan is field-based regulation and reclamation. Primarily what we're regulating is our aggregate mining. That's the primary surface mining in the state. We have had a modest increase in oil and gas activity. In this case, it's natural gas. And most of it's associated with the work that is occurring in Coos Bay area with coal bed methane exploration. And so that has put quite a stress on that very modestly funded program. And we do have legislation that will be introduced by Representative Hunt for a restructure of our oil and gas statutes and programs to bring them up to this century, and also look at a restructure of our fees as well. We do look at efficiencies in this program. We have partner with DEQ to help them out with some of their inspections. They have a stormwater program. Some of our surface mines are required to have stormwater permits, so we take care of those inspections and permitting for DEQ. And it works out quite well. They don't have to have inspectors come out. We have inspectors going out there anyway. We expect 1,500 of our sites per biennium. We did have a budget note last time around, which was to ask how we could look at streamlining the aggregate permitting process. We worked with a variety of natural resource agencies that have permitting or advisory authority within the aggregate streamlining, and have come up with, we are presently looking at where we have some areas where we may be able to eliminate some crossover, and we're in the process of preparing an IGA to develop a couple of demo projects with volunteer operators and land use authorities to see how that will see how we can move forward with implementing some of those ideas. In what we call the MLRR program, certainly our successes have been regulating with our experienced staff and being proactive on finding where the issues are and not spending all of our time in litigation. And we do maintain an excellent overall customer satisfaction with the way that we run that program right now. That said, and we'll talk a lot more about performance measures when we return on Monday, and so we have some issues we'd like to ask your advice on when it comes to our customer satisfaction. Our challenges are, as I said, we need a restructure of that oil and gas regulatory program that we'll have as a bill introduced and hope to have the discussion with folks on that. That will have a fiscal impact for the agency. We're concerned about some of the issues that are occurring right now for the changes in or re-implementation of the federal standards for in-stream aggregate removal. That's going to put more pressure on floodplains and uplands for aggregate removal. Now, we do not regulate in-stream aggregate removal. Department of State Lands does. But we start the regulation where they stop at the floodplain and go all the way up into the uplands. And there are economic issues and pressures out there right now that we would urge the state to look at developing a statewide policy on both the economies of scale here and the aggregate issues. That concludes this part. I just wanted to say one final thing. We are a small agency, but I have only been the director. I'm actually a scientist turned director, and so and that can sometimes be the best or the worst kind of administrators. But I wanted to say that it has been an absolute honor to work with the staff at the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. You're not going to find a better example of public servants anywhere than the folks that work there. Their innovation, their enthusiasm, they're bright people, and they really believe in what they're doing. And I hope you all take that in consideration when you think about how we all do our jobs. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Connor. Representative Garrard and then Representative Bullock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a former Klamath County Commissioner and state rep, well, not former state rep yet.
It's It's all this talk about retiring and baby numbers.
I thought you were going to stay through the adjudication.
Well, I had the opportunity of working with Ms. McConnell several sessions ago on the aggregate issue, which, you know, that was a very difficult one. But I wanted the committee to be made aware that your agency has been a big, big asset in the Klamath Basin. And as one of your more geological active areas, there is great interest down the Klamath Basin along the areas of renewable energy in using geothermal water to produce electrical power. And I know you're I'm just wondering if your agency had an opinion in that area, but we're most pleased in the basin on your agency's participation.
Thank you, Representative Girard and Senator Devlin, Chair and committee members. I thank you for that. We are and sat on the governor's renewable energy advisory policy and argued strongly that geothermal should be part of that renewable energy, and I feel very strongly about that. And this state has a great potential for geothermal energy development, and your area is one of the areas that has been very proactive, not only with the direct geothermal that's used in the Klamath Falls area, but I know that OIT is drilling a deep well now. OIT has had what we call direct geothermal use in that they use it to the hot water to run through their heating sources and everything for direct use. But they are now drilling a deep well, or will be, to look at actually generating their power so that they're generating their power through geothermal resources that they have there. And we would love, we have worked with them, and we'll also be permitting their well. But I think that we have a great opportunity in the state to have a better conversation about that, and we will be continuing to work with anyone that's interested. And we are in the process now. We have a project being funded by the U.S. Geological Survey to update the resource assessment for geothermal energy for the state, for the database. So that database will be coming out here, I think the end of this year is when it's due.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I absolutely agree. Geothermal is a great potential. We've got some lights on Newbury as well, and I'd like to see that. I'm a little curious. I was reading the budget summary here, or analysis, or for lack of a better term, and there's in the governor's recommended budget $4.5 million in change in COPs to purchase light detection and ranging mapping data for 10,000 square miles. What's the data? And I emphasize the word purchase versus the agency. I'm guessing not capturing it. It's not from GIS. You're actually just buying this.
Representative Burley and Chair Devlin and committee members. Two things. Number one. In 30 seconds, I couldn't even begin to answer that, but that will be a primary part of our presentation on Monday. So I would respectfully ask if we could table that until then, and you'll hear more about LIDAR than you probably ever wanted to know.
Okay. Great. Well, look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you first thing.
Second thing Monday morning. I guess we have a grant.
Yes. Second thing Monday morning.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned.